This is Heroin Addiction, presented by That Time I Got Reincarnated in the Same World as an Anime Podcaster. In this series, two hairy dudes discuss sequential art for young ladies. I'm Isekai Sensei Sama, aka Brad, and I'm joined as always by Bento Baggins, aka Ben.
Good day. I don't know any Korean to do my patented introduction with.
I think that's for the best.
I would struggle much more to pronounce it. So are we doing sequential art now? I thought did we call it sequential art before, or is it just comics?
I think that's come up in some of our episodes before. But I gotta come up with a funny tagline each time, you know, so can't just say comics every single time or manhwa.
That's true.
So, a little bit different this time. The series that you have read recently was a specific recommendation from me.
Yes. And it's a new subgenre of a subgenre for me, as I understand it.
So, the title of this, The Male Lead's Little Lion Daughter.
Yes.
So I picked this one for a specific reason. I think we'll save that reason for a little later, see if people can pick up on it. So
this is an interesting one. This is an interesting concept that I would not have thought of as a popular isekai subgenre. And it's not bad. Like I do find it charming. I guess I should talk a little bit about what the trope is.
Well, so before we jump into your thoughts, I'll read the summary real quick. Just give everybody a little opening here, and then we'll jump into the discussion. The handsome Duke Voriati is the most terrifying man in the Empire, with the coldest of demeanors and a gaze that can kill. But one day, he suddenly says that he wants to adopt a child? And that child is me? After finding me at a shady orphanage, he whisked me away to his snowy palace without a second thought. Now I'm learning all of the ways of the feared Voriati family from his knights. However, things get dicey when the Duke becomes suspicious of my origins. With these fangs and jet black hair, perhaps we are more than just kindred spirits.
Yeah. And I don't know. I feel like this one... I feel like that description really undersells. So I guess the protagonist in this isekai is a 30-year-old woman who has been reincarnated into another world, the, you know, fantasy medieval
novel,
romance too. Novel.
Yeah.
And this time this is similar in some ways to Author of My Own Destiny, but different in that it focuses specifically on the childhood. Author of My Own Destiny, she gets kind of, maybe not adopted, but like recruited, I guess, as a young teenager. And then she grows up pretty quickly as the series goes on. But she gets adopted by the same kind of guy. It seems to me like this is maybe a popular male lead or male...
Oh yeah,
father figure trope.
The cold Duke of the North is like 90% of manhwa has that in it.
That's interesting to me. I wasn't expecting to see that played out. I wonder where they get it from.
I can't really speak to this because I'm not a woman, but I have a feeling that it's popular because the idea of a strong man who is, you know, cold to most people. He's reserved and like he doesn't let his emotions out and everything. And then the female lead enters his life and he becomes open to her. Like she's the only one who can crack his shell. Like there's a romance to that, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's kind of a masculinity fantasy where he has the appearance of like this intense masculinity, but then he also, of course, has a soft side. He doesn't have any of the toxic bits of that. But in addition to the cold Duke of the North, I'm surprised that there is a father trope. I understand why it would be appealing as a character, because it's a character you could easily root for.
So you're speaking specifically like, as opposed to the female lead being the love interest of the cold Duke of the North, it's the dad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, I guess. I'm surprised that father figures occur with that much importance that frequently, because in the romance novels I'm familiar with, even like the ones based in old medieval times, usually the father is basically an absent character.
Yeah. And maybe that's where that stems from, is that you have, and especially in like Asian cultures where the fatherly role is traditionally distant and, you know, not around. And even when they are around, they're stiff and like they don't show affection and everything. And so this idea of, hey, here's this guy who is also stiff and cold and like doesn't like anybody, but then like the little girl comes into his life and he opens up to her and he loves her. And so like, it's a similar thing if she is the primary love interest, because there's a romance to it. It's just not strictly sort of like, it would be romance as in the traditional, you know, I don't know, medieval sense of the word, as opposed to the way we use it to mean like love. Mm. It is romantic.
Yeah.
The romance period.
It's a fantasy.
Right.
Yeah. So that's one trope I'm surprised is a thing. I kind of get it. The other trope I'm surprised is a thing, and I don't get it, actually, is the being reincarnated as a child and going through childhood. Like this story is entirely focused on her as a very young child.
Right.
Like we're talking maybe 8 years old.
Yeah. She reincarnated into a 5 year old. I think she's probably in her mid 20s or thereabouts. When whatever happened to her happened and she gets reincarnated. And when the Duke comes and picks her up, she's 7. So she's been in this world as an orphan in a terrible situation for 2 years. So
yeah,
I think that it's not a rare trope to have the female lead reincarnate into a child. It's something that happens in other isekais, you know, Japanese isekai, quite a lot.
Is it rare for them to stay as a child, or is this its own?
Generally, no. There's plenty that do that, but there's way more that the childhood is sort of just a tutorial for the isekai. And then you move on from that, and go like, oh, they had all these crazy powers as a kid. So then, you know, they grew up and now they're even more crazy powerful. But I think in the case of the manhwas that do this, I think it does go into that sort of romanticization of childhood in that way. You probably have a lot of people in these societies where their childhood wasn't great, you know, because even if they had, you know, a loving family, they still had to go through these difficult school systems and they had to deal with bullies and, you know, all this different stuff of modern life that is just sort of like not great for kids. Right. And so you dump them into this childhood where, you know, maybe some bad stuff happens, but then like in the case of Leonia here, she is the Duke's daughter and, you know, very quickly from what we're seeing now, obviously, like I said, she was there for 2 years before that. But, so now as the Duke's daughter, everything, she can have everything she possibly wants, you know, her life is going to be great. And so there's that fantasy to it, the wish fulfillment.
I guess that's another different take on the princess fantasy.
Yeah.
That I'm not used to. Because I'm used to the princess getting, you know, chasing the prince and wanting to get married.
Right. And normally that the princess thing is like they're older at that point, you know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe in their teens, but still older than like, you know, in this case, a 7 year old. Because what can a 7 year old do? Well, a 7 year old can get doted on by her father and can, you know, be doted on by everybody because she's small and cute and, you know, precocious and all that.
And so, she can live the fantasy of growing up as a prodigy. And
yeah.
It's interesting. So this particular one, it's not bad at all. I was a little concerned at first because there's a weird balance. It's trying to strike between the aspects of her intellect that comes from being an adult in a child's body. So she's immediately got that people underestimate her and people underestimate what she understands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fun. And there's even an explicit comparison between this and Detective Conan.
Right.
But that's not entirely
very explicit, by the way, in case anybody's wondering. There's literally a picture of him with a black bar across his eye, so you can't tell who he is.
So he's legally distinct. But yeah, it doesn't. So there's two kinds of chapters, I guess, in this. There's the one where it's doing the Detective Conan thing, where the drama and the tension comes from her being underestimated or her being placed in a situation where she could do more if she were an adult, but how does she, as a child, get people to take her seriously? But then there's the flip side, where she actually is a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of weird. It, like, I headcanon it a bit to make it make sense to me, and I guess I'm getting the vibe, and you can tell me if you get the same vibe, that she is kind of a child who just also has these memories.
Yeah, it's
like her brain is childlike, but she has the knowledge, if not the wisdom, of her past life.
There's a couple different things in play here. So I'm going to try and hit a couple points here. So the first one, and I think the biggest thing that I want to sort of make clear, the fact that she's reincarnated, the fact that she, you know, was, you know, an older lady who, you know, died or whatever and got reincarnated here, it really doesn't come up that much. There's a couple chapters where it's sort of the main theme, but then they sort of get done with that. And I don't think it came up at all until a hint of it in like the 10th chapter or something like that.
No, for a long time, I didn't even know if this was going to be an isekai.
Yeah. And so,
well, then it ramps up a little bit more towards the end as she starts to have that thing that I was familiar with from Author of My Own Destiny, where you do find out that it is a romance novel world, and she does know future events because mm-hmm. she read the novel, and she's trying to figure out where she is in the story and what has changed from her presence. And that seems to be something of a trope in these stories.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting because she acts like a child, I'd say 85% of the time.
Well, and so that's an interesting thing, because while she definitely exhibits childlike behaviors a lot, I reread 30 chapters last night in preparation for this.
There's only 50.
Right. I was considering just keeping going, but it was getting a little late. She never really says, like, I'm a child. She doesn't really lie to people and say, I'm a kid. In fact, in a lot of instances, she just comes right out and says, like, no, I'm 30 or whatever. And, you know, people just don't take her seriously, because why would you? She's a 7-year old. But I did find that interesting as I was rereading it. It was like, there's one point where she explicitly says, well, I'm seven. But I think that was like the only one where, besides her behavior, her being a child came up from her. So like, she's not lying to people about the fact, you know, she just isn't explicitly saying, hey, I was actually a 28-year-old and I died and got reincarnated or whatever.
Well, the weird thing though is I don't know. She doesn't behave like an adult either.
Right.
And yeah, and this is it's a weird distinction to try to make in a manhwa or a manga, because characters act over the top and immature all the time. Mm-hmm. And you can never really be sure if that's just exaggeration or if we're trying to say something a little deeper with this, because even Duke is his title. Even he acts a little over the top, cartoony sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and he's very much of the attitude of like, I'm in charge. I have all the money. I can do whatever I want. Everyone needs to listen to me, which, you know, could be taken as him being an asshole, but also he's incredibly capable. So it's like, yeah.
But it seems like definitely the charm of the series is more based around the fact it's more based around a father-daughter relationship than it is around being an isekai.
Yes.
So if anything, I think the isekai almost gets in the way in this one.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I think they needed, in a situation like this, you sort of need the protagonist to have a mental age older than a child, because as the reader, you need to be able to put yourself in that situation. And it's difficult for people to, you know, understand a child's mind. You know, as a father myself, I can tell you sometimes kids just don't make any sense. In fact, most of the time.
Well, but that's where a lot of the humor comes from in this, is that to the adults around her, she doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And that is one thing I would say, like, this is ostensibly a comedy. There are points of like good drama in it, but I would say overall it's a comedy, at least so far. The first season, mostly comedy. There's definitely some stuff in there where there's some violence, and, you know, although I would say a lot of times the violence is played for comedy.
Yeah, I would agree. They are getting into a little bit more of the drama side. It looks like for season two, they've set up what started off as kind of a silly political plot is now kind of evolving into a more interesting political dilemma.
Yeah.
And because right now, in season one at least, the Duke is more than capable of just steamrolling his way through any situation. He just has that much military might that nobody can really challenge him, and he can just behave however he wants unchecked. Mm-hmm.
And they do establish that he is actually more powerful than the Imperial family.
Yeah. But I think one of the things where I say the isekai almost gets in the way, though, is because it's like, it relies so much on building this father-daughter relationship, which it does, and it does it well. Like, I found mm-hmm. it charming. I think it was a fun read. But I did keep asking myself, like, would a grown woman bond in this way with this guy? Like, would she think of him as a father? How does she, is she yeah. like?
And so that is my third point on reincarnation as a child, which is, it's not something that they really hinted at in this series, but it's something that they've done in other series I've read, where they sort of explain it away by saying, like, yes, you've reincarnated, but you reincarnated into the body of a child that has the mind of a child. And so you're trying to fit an adult mind inside a child mind, and the child mind sort of
wins. You still don't have a frontal lobe. You still don't have all that, Yeah, I can get that.
Yeah, and so while you might retain some memories and stuff like that, your personality and who you are sort of reverts to that of a child. And I like that explanation because without that, it's a bit weird.
I'd almost like it more if she... Reincarnation is a weird thing here. Like, is she truly reincarnated? Like, the way... If you imagine if reincarnation were real, and some people have claimed to retain memories of past lives, then they're born. Those literally are their parents, but they also remember another life. But they're a different person in this life. So right. I was kind of wondering if maybe that's just a cultural boundary that maybe I'm overthinking, and maybe it doesn't need explanation to a Korean audience.
Well, we're definitely overthinking it.
Well, and that's our job. But yeah. No, I wonder if a Korean audience would just think like, yeah, she's a different person now. She remembers this previous life, but that's not who she is now.
I would go that direction if it weren't for the fact that she explicitly talks about how she misses her previous life.
Yeah, so that's another point where I'm constantly imagining this adult woman just being infantilized, yeah. But then she always enjoys it. So there's always, if I had one complaint, this is my one complaint, is that there's a dissonance between the isekai and the father-daughter drama.
Yeah, and I definitely get that. I think... And I do this with so many series I read, but there's a suspension of disbelief, you know, and you sort of just have to go, yep, that's weird. Moving on. I like the rest of this. So.
Well, and that is a valid point for this one, because I could move on and like the rest of it. I think where my problem is, maybe it does a good job of the father-daughter relationship because I get annoyed at the isekai part because it's taking away from that. Like, now I have to try to headcanon my way into this making sense. And I was like, just do away with the isekai or handle it differently. So she established this relationship with this guy and then got her memories back or something right. like that.
There's another version of this trope where they just gain the memories of a previous life. So like they are themselves, but then they, you know, they get hit on the head or whatever, and they like unlock these memories. And so they don't become a different person. They just gain access to like additional information.
I would like that better. Yeah. I think
that's the best way to do it. And those series always seem to be a bit more intelligent than others.
Yeah. Well, and I guess it's fair enough to talk about this one doesn't mind embracing some weird problematic stuff. Like,
yeah,
because this is where I could say that everything I've said up to this point is my charitable interpretation, which is the interpretation I favor because I did like the series. There's a less charitable interpretation where this is like a daddy fetish. And it never leans it doesn't get inappropriate or perverted or anything, but it does have
a little, but not in a real way, in a comedic way.
Yeah. It objectifies muscly people.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get like too weird. I don't know how else to put it. It doesn't get uncomfortably weird.
I would say, you know, if there's a line, it can see the line, but it hasn't gone up to it.
Yeah. But every time they go back to the isekai and you're reminded that this is like a 20-something year old woman, and she hints that she may be like physically attracted to her muscly father.
Yeah.
There's a little bit like that's my... And I don't even know if it's not a charitable interpretation or if it might be the intention. There's a little bit of a daddy fetish.
Well, I can tell you from reading comments on Bato, daddy fetish is definitely a thing. Like,
yeah,
these ladies are really into it.
I don't think we need to profile them all as ladies.
Well,
but yeah, so that if that's the case, if because right now I think I don't know if you've read more or if there is a second season yet.
No, so I started this with the fan translation, and that got dropped before season one finished.
Okay.
It was actually only like a couple chapters before. So I picked up the official one and unfortunately had to wait a while for that to get caught up. But then the last chapter of the first season was very recently. What was this?
Like 12 days ago at the time of recording.
Yeah, so... We got good timing on this one.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see where it goes in season two. Because I feel like season one built the world, built the relationships, and now they're really free to explore whatever themes it is, whatever themes there are that they want to explore.
Yeah.
And so we'll be interested to see if it goes more into that daddy fetish. I don't think it's going that way. I hope it's not going that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm not 100% certain of that yet.
I think that would probably ruin it because the relationship that they have now is like perfect. Mm-hmm. The way that it's growing, the way that they're connecting, the way that they care for each other.
Yeah, it's like, please keep this innocent. Please keep this, you know, wholesome.
And if it's not, if it becomes not innocent in the future, it can't really be between them. It needs to grow. You know, there needs to be a romantic male lead interest. That's, you know.
Well, yeah, because the interesting thing is she hints that in the novel, the romance was between the Duke, who is her father, and some as of yet unintroduced female protagonist.
Yeah.
So is that going to turn into exploring a mother-daughter relationship, or is it going to turn into a rivalry?
Right, and I think that's going to be the interesting thing. I feel like that's the direction that it's going of like, okay, Leonia wasn't in the original novel, so things are already drastically different. So when the original female lead shows up, like, how's it gonna go? Leonia has already shown that she won't put up with people's shit. So
yeah, this one is like a tentative recommendation from me right now because I did like it. I think of right now, of the three I've read, I think Author of My Own Destiny is still my favorite.
Okay.
But this one, I think I understand why you like it. And I'm going to guess it's because as a father yourself, there's probably a lot of moments where the parent-child bonding is very wholesome and very fun. And it's interesting to see the effect that having something he needs to like protect and care for has on the Duke and how it makes him a different person and makes him care about things he might not otherwise have cared about.
Yeah. You nailed it. That was exactly it.
Yeah. And it does a really good job of that.
Yeah.
And that is something that only recently they've started to explore in anime and there's still not a lot of it.
Yeah. There's plenty of, I shouldn't say plenty. There's enough manhwa of it that I can recommend a couple others. But yeah, I wanted to, the whole reason, if any, you know, drop a comment if you guessed why I recommended this. But yeah, the reason I wanted to have you read this one was, I mean, first of all, I think it's great, just like objectively. But also because I wanted to see the difference in, you know, your opinion of it versus mine, you know, from me being a father and you not being a father, and see how that, you know, how that colors my interpretation of it versus yours.
Yeah. I'm sure it resonates more if you are a parent, but I still got the theme and it's still, I think it's like even if we haven't been parents, we've all been children. I mean, so we all know what having that relationship or not having that relationship has meant to us. And I think as a result of that, you can get something out of this.
Yeah.
I will say, because they teeter every now and then, if season two makes this weird, they will have shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
So, because I really think that is the strength of this, and I hope the author realizes it. Because I'm not sure right now if she has stumbled onto that or if this is the intention.
I have to feel like it's the intention, because it's very in your face about it. So it would be weird if it was accidental.
Yeah.
The other thing...
I agree. I have hope.
The other thing would be, and this is something that happens with a lot of manhwa, is the artist changes between seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time, people are very upset about that. The art is, you know, not as good for the second season or something like that. I personally think the art in this one is really good. If not on par with Author of My Own Destiny, then better.
The only thing that I liked more in Author of My Own Destiny is they used, and again, I don't know how they do these, but they used patterns better in the texturing of the clothing. Sure. That was the only, and that's a minor thing.
Yeah.
The costumes in this are plain compared to Author of My Own Destiny, but Author of My Own Destiny is also ridiculous. No one has clothing that looks like that.
It's not as patterned or anything. However, I personally think that the outfits in this are like, and this is something that I don't really care about all that much, but I think the outfits in this are really well done. It feels to me like they're taking a lot of care in it.
Everyone cuts a good silhouette. The outfits make sense. They do definitely, like, she has her dresses and he has all his formal wear, and it's all very stylish and fashion model-y. And the art, unlike some of the other manhwa I've looked at, this is never bad. It is always good. It is always professional.
Yeah.
I'd say this is professional grade art. Whereas that is not always the case.
Yeah.
But yeah, the art's good. The only thing I don't get, and I guess this is how it's written in Korean, is the use of language. It's always so weird to me when a character goes off and is like, "I'm gonna cut your nuts off, shithead," like when it gets so vulgar. Like, she has these moments where she goes like,
yeah,
from 0 to 60, and she talks like, I don't know anyone who talks like that, let alone somebody who is described as being like a middle class city dwelling woman. But maybe that's just me and the circles I travel in.
I think in this instance it's done for the comedy of it, which I think is probably the strongest suit of this series, because the thing that like really grabbed me, besides the good feeling you get from these relationships that she's forming with her adoptive father and with her new friends and all the servants and all that, is that she's so crass and like loud and in your face. And I, you know, thinking about it as like, oh, she's 28 or whatever, it's like, okay, well, you know, whatever. But like, if you sort of forget about that and go, she's a 7-year-old, it's hilarious. Like, the thought of a child actually acting like this, I would love to spend the day with her, you know?
I could see that. Yeah, I think this is a good one. I'm interested to see where this goes. I don't know. It's not a super complicated story right now, but even the side characters, I think I like. I did not remember the names very well, but
yeah,
I can picture every side character.
Right. They are memorable silhouettes. The names are a little bit difficult sometimes.
I have a web of interconnected people. Like, I know that his assistant is actually the son of this double agent house.
Right.
I remember all the intrigue and all the drama. Yeah. I don't remember the names, so I can't really discuss any other characters at length. But I do also like the tensionlessness of it. So I do hope they get a little bit more drama in, but I also like how, I don't want to see a kid getting beaten up. I don't want this to be all over twist or anything like that. I like how she is accepted and anytime somebody tries to undermine her, it's always over very quickly.
Yeah. And I don't think that she could really get abused at this point. They showed pretty early on. I think it was chapter in the 20s or something with her first etiquette teacher. She's not going to take anybody's shit, and she can she can do her thing when she needs to, you know? So I don't think there's going to be danger in that way, but
no. There's
probably, yeah, like you said earlier, I think there's going to be some political drama. But given the power of the family, it's probably not going to be that tense because they'll be able to deal with it.
Hmm.
And I will say that, that don't look down on me just because, you think I'm a bastard child or whatever, the way she puts people in her place with, and the way that Duke puts people in their place for that is so satisfying to me. I love that stuff where it's like, how dare you? How dare you?
Cause
who are you?
With the etiquette teacher, I had a feeling where it was going. Cause the tone of the series, Leonia is not a subtle person.
Yeah.
She, nor is the Duke. So, whenever they are wronged, they're going to act swiftly and decisively for better or worse.
Yeah.
So I knew where they were going, but I was just like, oh man, it's just nice because so often, especially if you were reading a romance novel, that would drag on for so long.
Oh yeah.
And it does make the payoff maybe a little less impactful when she does finally turn it around. But man, I don't mind skipping to that part.
Yeah.
It's just a nice light read. I'd say it's wholesome, heartwarming, good recovery manhwa, maybe.
Yes.
If you are reading more intense, maybe tragic romance.
Yeah. They never spend too much time wallowing in the depression of anything. They deal with it and move on and get back to daddy daughter, happy fun times. So yeah, any other notes or anything you got?
No, I think the only note I'm going to say is I don't know we haven't read a complete series yet, but definitely I think this one, when season 2 is well underway, I think we'll need to revisit.
Yeah, we can definitely do that. Who knows how long it'll be, but maybe after season 2 is over, we can do a follow-up.
Yeah, because I definitely think season 2 is going to make or break this one.
I have high hopes.
Right now, I'd recommend reading season 1. If anything we said so far has interested you, I think you'll like it.
Yeah.
But there's just room to fail or room to thrive.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I'm ready to rate this.
All right, let's do it.
So I'll let you guess. What do you think my rating is on this?
9 out of 10.
I'll tell you what, I'm waffling between 9 and 10. I'm on the fence of if I want to elevate this to a 10. Or if I want to say, since it's got some room to grow there, if I want to leave it at a 9. So to entice people to listen to the follow-up episode, I'm going to rate this as a 9 right now. And we'll come back and we'll see if it gets upgraded to a 10.
I was going to say, I think I'm on the fence between, what did I give Kill the Villainous? I don't remember. If I gave Kill the Villainous a 7, then this is an 8.
And if you gave Kill the Villainous an 8?
Then I get, this would be a 9. This is better than Kill the Villainous. Mm. I like it less than Author of My Own Destiny. The only thing I... The whole her being weirdly into muscles thing, that that doesn't work for me. It's humor. It's not terrible. I'm not judging it too harshly. That didn't work for me. And
I think it would be weirder if they didn't always call her out on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like I said, we were talking offline a little bit. I like that she wants muscles herself.
Yeah.
So it's more about the muscles than it is like a sexual thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a little weird to me. That's one thing. And then just the dissonance between the isekai and the father-daughter relationship, because the father-daughter relationship is so strong and so good, anything that takes away from it, I'm having a hard time seeing as anything other than a misstep right now. Mm. But I am flexible. Like you said, I could go up or down in season 2. So I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 for now. It could get a 9 out of 10 for me, depending on where they go. I definitely think if they have the Duke get into some kind of trouble and she has to save him, that's going to bump it up for me. That's something I'm looking forward to. Because they haven't gotten a lot into the combat. But it seems like they might. There's an awful lot of training going on.
Right. And they hinted at like, hey, the monsters are doing weird stuff. It's not like all the other seasons where we just go and we call them and everything's fine.
Yeah. So I'll be interested to see if she deploys the fangs of the beast and saves her house. I think that might bump it up for me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so this time I wanted to introduce something a little bit different from what we've done before, which is picking the next series in the episode. So in case people want to read along and then listen to our thoughts after they've read it, they can do that. So is there any series that has caught your eye on the list?
I haven't looked... I haven't looked at any. Maybe give me 2 or 3 you want to explore, and I can pick out of that.
Well, I will say, I did order like the first half of these in sort of my recommended order. So if you wanted to just sort of, you know, start at the top and be like, okay, what do we got going on here at the top? We could do it that way.
Okay, so the first three are Secret Lady, Solitary Lady. And Beware the Villainous.
So out of those three, I think in terms of ones that you would really enjoy, Secret Lady would be it. I mean, it's right there at the top, but I think that would be the one.
All right. Let's do it. Secret Lady, it's as good as any other.
All right. We're gonna read Secret Lady. I don't think this...
I favored
looks
it.
Looks like there's... 52 chapters out right now. I don't think season 1 has ended yet. If this one is going to do seasons, they might not. I was just looking on Bato for this. Somebody left a review 17 hours ago. 2 out of 5 stars. This webtoon is just not very good. I disagree.
I hope you're listening, guy, because we're coming for you.
Yeah.
All right. I can tell you the art is already getting me. So.
Well, that's what I expected.
Yep.
And it's got a good story with some, you know, fun subterfuge, and there's some romance in there, and I think it's a good time. So.
All right.
Well, let us know if you're reading it along with Ben. So you can let us know what you think on social media. And, you know, if you want us to read another series that you think we'd both like, you can give us a recommendation. Be sure to check out our regular podcast, That Time I Got Reincarnated in the Same World as an Anime Podcaster. You can check out our website, animepodcasterreincarnation.com, where you can leave comments about the podcast episodes, and there's also other posts and reviews up there. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Isekai Sensei, and Ben is at Benbo Swaggins. You can send us an email to isekaisenseisama@gmail.com. We're also on YouTube as That Time I Got Reincarnated as an Anime Podcaster. We'd really appreciate it if you would rate us on your podcast platform of choice. And if you can't get enough of hearing Ben talk about reading stuff, you can check out his other podcast, Words About Books.
It's Bookalicious.
It's currently Dune Month on Words About Books, if you're into Dune.
And you should be.
You actually got Nate to not feel too bad about reading Dune.
I'm converting the heathens right and left.
Well, that'll do it for us today. And now I'm off. I've got some Manwa to freebase.
All right. See you guys.